This week, we come to Mark chapter 5. If you got your Bibles, you can pull that out. 2 weeks ago, we were in chapter 4, and the end of chapter 4 is that Jesus is crossing the Sea of Galilee. He was sleeping, and the disciples wake him up. He calms the waters, but here's where we pick it up. He comes to the other side of the sea, and that's where we're going to begin to read here this morning. Mark chapter 5, verse 1. They came to the other side of the sea and to the country of Gerasenes, and when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs with a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and he fell down before him and crying out with a loud voice. And he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, the Son of the Most High? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to them, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And Jesus asked him, "What's your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there in the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it to the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus, and they saw the demon-possessed man and the one who had had a legion sitting there, clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with the demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. If you remember back earlier in Mark, this wasn't the first encounter with the demonic world, between the demonic world and Jesus. But here's where we need to begin, and we need to dig in this area just a little bit more today. But I shared a stat a while back, and I want to put this up on the screen again. It's from Barna Research, and look at what it says here. 4 out of 10 professing Christians, 40%, strongly agreed that Satan is not a living being, but is a symbol of evil. An additional 2 out of 10 Christians, 19%, said that they agree somewhat with that perspective. A minority of Christians indicated that they believe in Satan is real by disagreeing with the statement. 1/4, 26%, disagreed strongly, and about 1/10, 9 disagreed somewhat. The remaining 8% were not sure what they believe about the existence of Satan. The fact is, many people who call themselves followers of Christ, a Christian, don't believe in a literal Satan. And when you stop and ask the question, why? Yeah, I'm not sure why, but as I was pondering that, I go, maybe for some, you know, you can't do a scientific test on to whether there's a devil or not. And maybe for some it's this, is that, you know what, they would appear intellectually unsuperior. They just don't want to admit. And so they ignore it in one sense. But the irony is so many people say, I don't think Satan's real. And yet the piece that I kind of puzzle at is why in the world the entertainment industry are so drawn to the spiritual, and in particular the demonic world. When you think of all of the movies that have been out there, and even if you watch video games and literature, the world is packed with this idea of a demonic world. So there's a contradiction for me. I go, why? But here, we want to stir this morning in this area just for a while. And just, I think it's a reminder to us of how careful we need to be. So I want to just run through some realities of the demonic world and some applications in it. But if you're following along in the sermon outline, I said number one this. The New Testament, I discovered that this week, that really never uses the term demon possession. Even in this passage here where it does, it's really not written in the original languages that way. The better word is demonized. And people who work with this would say this, demon possession in one sense keeps it too narrow because when you think of the word demonized, it can imply possession, but it can invite all the way to a bunch of influence to just a small amount of influence. So we have to admit that there's degrees of influence by Satan here. And I think it's fair to say then that sometimes we, I think, take for granted where maybe there's things going on that we really don't think about and maybe should be. But let me give you another one, number two here. As people work within this area, there are signs of demonic influence. And here's where I ended up doing some extra reading this week on this topic. And realizing there are characteristics, and when some of them are actually in this text, and we'll point those out here today. But the first bullet there today, I said it this way. It's associated with the word unclean. See, with demonic realm, there seems to be this idea of filth, either moral filth or even physical filth, as well as the kind of combine that with the whole issue around death and dying. I remember when we first moved to Brainerd area and became the youth pastor there, the area was known for the sacrifices that were going on in the county. It was a lot of demonic activity taking place down there. But you notice this in text 5, that this man is living among the tombs. Among the dead bodies. Now, we think of a graveyard, but it's different than that because they had limestone cliffs up around the lake, the Sea of Galilee. And what they would do is they would take dead people that died and they would put them in the tombs and they would basically rot in the tombs. And this man was, that's where he was living, occupying his space. So I don't think, you know, I think when we pause and we put it forward to our day, I don't think it's any coincidence that there's, in one sense, a rise of the occult and the demonic realm and how it's associated with movies and media and literature in that context. But there's a second sign as well that when people work with this area, it often includes isolation. The man in this narrative, he was isolated. Now, I got to point one thing out. If you know the story, if you've ever read it in Matthew version, there's actually two demonics that are wandering around in this area. But here, Jesus, this man pulls him away. There's demons that are controlling him. And remember, Jesus tells him, go back to your family. This guy had a family. You know, tell him what the Lord has done for you. Go home. This demon, somewhere along the line, he had a normal life, but all of a sudden something was influencing and tormenting him. So this idea of being influenced, we got to be reminded that there's an attitude withdrawal and that people want to emotionally separate from other people and even physically in that sense. And I've seen that as well. Another bullet here, another reminder here. Demonic activity can include supernatural strength. I want to put on the screen, look at verse 3 again. And no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he was wrenched the chains apart and he broke the shackles in pieces. And when people write, and they're dealing with it even today, there's many stories out there of great physical strength for these people that are influenced by demons. Here they didn't have the power to even to subdue him. Another bullet, another nuance to this. There's a sense of torment that are people that are struggling in this area. In this story, we see that he's wandering up in the mountains and he's crying out in torment. And it says he's bruising himself and cutting himself with stones. And I think you go, okay, why was he doing that? I'm convinced it's this, is that the physical pain, he was hoping the physical pain would overpower the tormenting that was going on within his soul. This man was tormented. I've worked a couple of times with people that have struggled in the demonic realm, and one of them, a guy that I knew that I had dealt with, he struggled with profound anger. And he had actually gone down to Mayo Clinic to try to deal with it. But there was this sense where he couldn't control his anger, and he hated it. There was a torment with him. He didn't want to be angry, and yet he had no control over it. Great torment. Let me throw another one at you. The demonic world is also seductive. See, for many people, and especially young people, there's an attraction to this area. You know, I have to confess, I remember playing with a Ouija board one time when I was probably eighth, ninth grade, somewhere in that area. And we were completely unaware of the potential for demonic influence in that area. And I'll tell you, there was some weird stuff that it did for us. But young people are curious and think it's fun and games to dabble in this. We had a young girl in our college ministry in Vancouver where she somehow had opened herself up to the demonic world, and the youth pastor was working, doing some counseling with her, and he ended up identifying, I think it was 5 or 6 different demons that was controlling her. One of them was a demon of lying, and she was a compulsive liar. And he was talking to the different demons. He invited me to be a part of that. I said, at the time, I said, no, thank you. But there's that reality of the demonic world, and it's tempting. Parents, if you don't know what Charlie is, you need to go online and look that up. It's a very popular game. It's put out on YouTube. It's encouraging kids to do some things in that area. I remember the youth pastor that worked with there. He had kind of a gift of spiritual discernment in this area. And we had a game night at church, and he walked into the church, and there was a sense where he just goes, something is wrong here. And lo and behold, over in the corner of the gym, there was back in the corner, there was a bunch of guys that had brought, somebody had brought Dungeons and Dragons, and they were playing this game. And there was just a demonic presence around that game. So I think we got to be very careful and help our kids and protect them from those things. Parents, you need to talk to your children about that, because they're going to hear about that stuff in school. But another one, this one's a little bit more difficult, I think, because the next bullet, there still can be a recognition of the authority of Jesus. So I want to put on the screen from the text here where we see this. Verse 6, and when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and he fell down before him, crying out with a loud voice, and he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. This man recognized who Jesus was, or at least the demon did. Now, I got to point out something here as well, is that when we think of, I'll even use the word demon possession or demonized, we tend to think that they're always in this state of the demons controlling them, and that's not necessarily true. From my experience as well, is that at times what's happened, there's kind of a dual thing going on. And even in this story, recognize that this man runs, sees Jesus, runs up to him. I do not believe that that was the demon that was pulling him toward Jesus. Why would the Jesus want to encounter, or why would the demon want to encounter Jesus? I go, I don't think so. This was in the man's power. He comes up to Jesus, but then there's this conversation goes on. And he goes, well, who is it, the man or the demon? Probably the demon. And he recognizes, you are the Son of the Most High. See, there's an acknowledgement that he is God. There's no relational component. See, I think we get this idea that if they're demonized, they're influenced, that they're going to be atheists. Folks, that's not true. They can actually believe that Jesus is God. More likely doesn't have a relationship with him. But they can speak spiritual things and still be impacted in the demonic world. Let me add another one that fits with this. Next bullet, the duality or the multiplicity of personalities can be exhibited. And when the people that work with this extensively go, there's lots of times there's multiple things taking place. And this girl that we had in our college ministry, there's 5-6 demons. So it manifests itself differently at times. But look at verse 9. And Jesus asked him, "What's your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." It isn't just one. There was thousands. Extreme case here. But I remember that I was working with this guy that was dealing with the anger. I had gone out to his house and I was looking to share the gospel with him. And so I happened, he was battling, telling me about his anger stuff and why and the torment in one sense that he was in. And I happened to say this, I think it was the Holy Spirit. I said, "Okay, what are the voices in your head saying when I share this stuff with you?" And he goes this, "This voice is saying this. This voice is saying this. This voice is saying this." And then I asked him, "Is there another voice that's saying what Ken is saying is true?" And he said, "Yeah, there is." But there was two or three different voices arguing against what the Holy Spirit was obviously trying to do. Now, the good news is that man eventually gave his life to Christ that night. But there's many things, there's multiplicity, there's many demons can work at the same time, and I think we forget that. Look at verse 10 even. "And he begged him earnestly to send them, out of the country." There can be multiple influences of the demonic realm. Let me give you another bullet. Often there can be suicidal tendencies. Now, you got to hear me and be careful on this one because you can't assume that every suicidal tendency comes from Satan. But I believe at times that there's this whispering of demonic world going, "It's not worth it, it's not worth it. Get rid of the pain." They want to claim a soul. I think it needs to be explored, though, if those thoughts are going on. One last one. Last bullet, demons aren't satisfied unless they're influencing this world. Did you notice that they didn't want to be removed? They didn't want Jesus to just, you know, be out of them and "I'm going to throw you into the abyss." No, they wanted to stay in the country and impact and influence people. So what they do is they ask, "Would you just send us into the pigs so we can stay in the area?" And the pigs, 2,000 of them, run down and they drowned in the sea. Do you catch the breath and the dynamics of the demonic world? And I think we underestimate it sometimes as well. But there's a third issue as well in your notes. I said it this way, number three. People can see the power and the reality of the cross and still not surrender to him. First note that the demons, and this is kind of, you think of it this way, they're not repentant. I've always wondered, can a fallen angel repent? I don't know. I don't know if Scripture ever addresses it, but obviously they don't hear. But there's another piece here in the picture of this story. So these guys that are taking care of the swine, and obviously they're not Jews, by the way. Jews wouldn't be dealing with swine. They wouldn't have a herd of swine. But they run back to the city. They tell what's happened. And a whole crowd then come out. And I would assume 2,000 pigs bobbing in the sea would be an interesting picture there. But they walk up to Jesus and they see demon-possessed man who is normal. He had his clothes on. And he's speaking clearly. But catch the reaction in verse 17. "And they began to beg Jesus to depart from the region." They had just seen a miracle. A man who was healed beyond what they could ever imagine. And they say, "Jesus, get out of here." And you, when you ask the question, why? I think it's kind of obvious here. that Jesus hit them in the most sensitive spot they ever could be hit, their pocketbook. They just lost 2,000 pegs. That was money that was gone. But can we transplant even that idea to 2016? Isn't the love of money, doesn't it get in the way of the willingness to bow and to surrender to Jesus? You know, submission has always been an issue, all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and Satan has its roots in that. Adam and Eve were enticed to say, come out under the reign and rule of God. You can become your own gods. You can have autonomy. You get the right to control your own world. But that's these group of people as well. They were telling Jesus, you know what? Yeah, you healed this disturbed guy, but you're going to interfere with our lives. So how about just go on the other side of the sea? Would you? Would you leave? See, people can recognize who Jesus is and just not surrender. Let me add another one, number four. Really, this is the critical issue of the day. Number four, just we need to remember Jesus gives mercy and he heals people and has the power to defeat our real enemy in this world. He heals. He healed this demon-possessed man who had thousands of demons within him. Here's a verse I want to put on the screen that is so important, I think, for us to remember here. Look at Ephesians 6:12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. See, I think it's easy to kind of ignore this issue. Last week, we had them, if you weren't here, we had a missionary couple up here, and we did an interview with them. And I think it was very challenging to me. Because one of the pieces that they added was we tend to think about groups of people as the enemy. For example, Muslims. We tend to think they're the enemy. But you go, this verse says, no, not really. The real enemy is Satan and his forces. And sometimes we buy into the idea that if we just vote the right person in, that somehow we're going to have this godly country. And folks, that won't happen until the gospel goes through our country. Frankly, it needs to be a revival. But God, we recognize that there's an evil one out there looking to blind the hearts of people in this world, many groups of people. See, the enemy, Satan, he's looking to gospel stay away. He wants nothing more than the gospel not to go out. For the light, he wants our lights to stay under a bed, under a candle, to keep it dark. That's what he's working toward. But here in this text this morning, do you hear of the mercy that Jesus demonstrated? This man was a recipient of God's mercy. And without this intersection of Jesus in his life, this man would have been condemned forever. But look at verse 18 here. As he was getting into the boat, that would have been Jesus, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. Now, again, think about this. This man is not a Jew. More than likely was not a Jew. I think we can confirm that, actually. But salvation had come to this man. He was changed. And his response was he wanted to be with Jesus. Jesus, can I crawl in the boat with you? But do you catch then what that meant? If he wanted to get in at that moment, do you understand what it's saying? Is he wasn't going to turn around and head for home right away. There was a complete abandonment to Christ at this moment. And I think here's the challenge for many people in our country that come to faith, even we get healed spiritually or recipients of God's mercy. And the tendency is to run back to comfort and to kind of jump up our heels, but we really aren't interested in abandoning our lives to Christ like this man. This man wanted to be with Jesus. He had a radical new identity. He's now a disciple of Jesus. And Jesus tells this man, you know what? You can't get in the boat, but you will follow me. And look at the assignment that he gives to this man as a result of his mercy, 19 and 20. And he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. And go tell your family, your friends, I'm the one who gives mercy. Tell everyone that there's this man who has the power to give new life, the power to change one's identity, to become a follower of Jesus. You know, he took Jesus seriously. This wasn't just some snap judgment, and then he walks away. So he goes. It says he goes to Decapolis. I don't know if you know what that is. Decapolis is a group of 10 cities that just kind of starts the Sea of Galilee and then goes southeast out off of there. And so there's 10 cities. They're mostly Greeks. And this man starts going through those 10 cities and talking about this man who had given him mercy and had healed him. It struck me. This guy was a missionary before any of the disciples were missionaries. He's probably the first one that was sent out in the truest sense of becoming a missionary. Let me connect that with last week, even with the Gibbons being here. I don't know if you caught something with the Gibbons when they talked about their roles. Michael, part of his role, and again, I'd encourage you to listen online to it, but Michael recruits people to become missionaries. And you know where he recruited, if you remember? South America, Africa, and Southeast Asia. And he asked the question, why? He didn't state it directly. I talked to him more about it. But the reason is that those are the countries that are raising up the missionaries right now. See, when we figure out how many Christians come out of each country, do you realize that the United States are sending less and less missionaries to go to the world and share the gospel? Matter of fact, when you compare, I looked at some stats even last night, and if you were to take 1 million Christians and say, how many do rise up out of that 1 million Christians? For the United States right now, we raise up 614 missionaries per 1 million Christians. Okay? But that's number 9. Ireland. I go, Ireland. You don't think, we never think of Ireland. I don't. They raise up over 2,100 per million. You know what the number one country is per capita in that sense of raising up missionaries? Palestine. See, the reality is the church is raising up fewer and fewer missionaries to send out. You know what? He acknowledges the U.S. church is willing to give money, but it's not raising up people to go. And I go, why? And I think maybe the church is becoming more and more unwilling to radically live for Christ when it comes to the Great Commission. You know, I think it's the Great Commission versus the Great Temptation in the United States. What's the great temptation? I think it's this: comfort, having the big home, having the right retirement. You know, and I think young people as well are sucked into that temptation of having a nice house, all of the things. They want comfort, security for their kids. You know, I even, as I pondered this last night, I go, would we rather have our kids be a sports star or a missionary? What would we say? Do we even think about that? I don't know if you realize this. The Gibbons, we had lunch with them afterward, and they are considering buying their first home. And Michael's 57. And they're looking to buy it in France. See, they haven't bought into the American dream. They're buying a home in France, and they just told us that all of their kids are back in the United States, and now their kids are starting to have grandkids, and they're buying their home in France. I tell you, it was really convicting for me as I was talking to him and pondering this afterward. The ease, 57, most people want to retire at 57. I think for the Gibbons, they've climbed into the boat with Jesus. And I think they're asking that in question, God, what do you want for me? That's what they're pondering. What does God want for them to be doing? I don't know if you realize, but I read this even in some of the stats last night. More and more countries are sending missionaries to the United States. Great Britain is sending missionaries. Brazil is sending missionaries to the U.S., because it's just not working. Churches are closing their doors here in the United States. I'm going to quit preaching and get back to the story here. This demon-possessed man received God's grace, and he responded profoundly. But think about applying this to us today. See, my suspicion is there's probably three groups of people in the setting even today. And I think that there's people maybe in this place today that are kind of like this. Yeah, Jesus, I know you work, but just don't get too close to me. I'm not interested in getting in the boat with you. Please don't mess with my life, my job, my whatever. So I think there might be some here today that's kind of the attitude, like that crowd there. But I also believe this. I think there's people here today that are beginning to figure out what it means to follow Jesus. Where you're asking, Jesus, let me get in the boat. Let me be with you. What do you want me to do, God? And I really believe that God honors that kind of heart. And as we listen to God, he begins to tell us what it means to respond like. What does the response look like? To go to Decapolis for us. What does that look like? To be telling our friends or coworkers about God's mercy and grace that has changed our lives. I really believe that there's people here in this room, that's where you're at. But I also think that there's a third group here today as well. I think some of you read this story, and deep down you realize that you're in bondage. Just like this demon-possessed man. Maybe you're not demon-possessed. But you hear this and you hear about God's mercy and you go, oh, I wonder if God could give me mercy and take off the chains of my addiction, my broken relationships, my desire for autonomy. Folks, if that's you, today needs to be about you receiving the grace and mercy of Jesus. And maybe there are demonic forces that are trying to keep you from that freedom. They're whispering to you, don't listen to him. Just go on your way. Ignore that. But Jesus is saying, no, come to me. And if that's you, could I encourage you just to talk to me, send me an email, grab one of the elders in the back of the bulletin there as well, but Jesus wants to set you free. See, his mercy and grace is waiting for you today. And I believe this, along with God's grace and mercy, he gives you the power to respond rightly. See, this story, folks, the main point is this is about Jesus, his power, but it is about his mercy and grace that he wants us to respond to that, to embrace it, But he also wants us to have that response of going and telling people about it. See, he cares. He cared for this demon-possessed man. And I think we look at this in our world and we kind of write those people off that might be in bondage to them. You know, they need Jesus. We need Jesus. Let's stand and pray.